rules everything around me. Cream, get the money, dollar, dollar bill, yo.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, recording late in the evening on Tuesday, June the 27th. You will listen to this towards the end of June and through the early July days, because I know some people listen to it really late. My guest this week is a person that you know well. He's been in the industry, the fantasy baseball industry, that is, for quite some time. He's a two-time award winner of the FSWA, including for Best Comedy Writer, the last time they had that one. He represents Northern California, represents San Diego, and he is the host of his own podcast because he's a poker pro, Read 'Em and Weep, the poker podcast. So, ladies and gentlemen, he's at Sammy Reed FI on Twitter. Sammy Reed.
Mr. Vlad Sedler, good to be with you. Am I the first returning guest on the pod this year?
For this year. Yes. Last year, Posma, I think, you know, John Posma was on and told some similar stories and then gave us some new ones this time around. But yes, you are the second one. I feel like we always have a good rapport. We've had it for many years. We were even roommates way back many years ago at First Pitch Arizona. Remember that? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're sharing a room and we're blowing it because we have to set our football DFS lineups in the morning. And you can't reg contests from Arizona. And First Pitch always used to fall on that weekend where the time changes, but Arizona's doesn't change. So it's all screwed up between like what California time is and Arizona time is. And, you know, we were up until 3-4 in the morning. So the whole thing was a disaster, but definitely good times.
Yeah, we were scrambling. I remember. And I don't think either of us won the $1 million that weekend.
Yeah, as I remember it, I did not win $1 million. I think that's right.
So this week, in today's episode, since we're about halfway through the Major League Baseball season, right around, I think, Thursday or so is when most teams will have played their 81st game. And so, yeah, the halfway point of the season, we're about 2 weeks away from the All-Star game. And we wanted to just kind of switch things up from the last couple episodes. I mean, last week with Gray Albright was pretty much very little fantasy baseball. We talked a lot of his great stories from his days as a comic, a writer for comics, and his story with Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston, which is wild.
I love that episode, by the way. Like, I mean, Gray is just like on a completely another level. The guy's completely out of hand, but it was amazing.
Yeah, dude, it was really fun recording with him. And we talked a little baseball. So in this one, we're going to kind of flip the script on you and talk baseball in a baseball podcast. Go figure. So we're going to kind of go over what we've seen over the first half by position, and then talk a little bit about what we might expect in the second half. So kind of the first thing I wanted to tackle is a common thread, and it may seem really sort of like a obvious or a no-brainer, but I've had people kind of clap back at me before on Twitter when I say things like hitting is contagious, because I think it just is, man. I just think people that say it isn't are really full of it. There's a true correlation among players that are usually earning the most fantasy value and how teams are doing in the standings. Like, you look right now at Rasball's player rater, for example, through Monday's games, 12 of the 15 top fantasy earners, they all come from those best teams. You got the Rangers and the Rays, you got the Braves and the Dodgers, obviously, and you got the Diamondbacks. So it's all these guys are, you know, they're purple pitchers.
The Padres aren't up there?
Yeah, go figure.
No, sketch.
yeah, check that thing. Rudy Gamble, rerun that. Something is wrong. Where's my Tatis?
Jesus so, Christ. Yeah, I mean, when you're starting Rougned Odor 5 days a week, maybe something's broke. I don't know.
Dude. So, yeah, I mean, you think back like even 2 years ago, right? Like, if you loaded up on those Blue Jays, you probably had a pretty good season. And granted, sometimes these guys come with high draft capital. That's the case with Dodgers, with Braves. But that, you know, 2 years ago, I mean, most people knew that we were going into that season where the Blue Jays weren't going to be playing at Rogers Center. They were playing their games in basically like little kids' parks, little league parks. And we knew the ball was going to be flying. And hey, look, you had four of the top nine hitters in fantasy value that season all came from that team. It was like, you know, Bichette, Teoscar, you know, Simeon and Guerrero Jr. Obviously. Wow, and yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's just a common thing here. So it shouldn't be any surprise. So it's kind of thinking back to when we start our prep, like figuring out those teams, where are the teams that we think are going to pop and get all that, you know, the late round draft capital and basically help our fantasy teams, right? Like I wasn't on the Rangers. I mean, I kind of liked maybe the Rangers pitching this year, but all those guys individually didn't really pop out. I wasn't an Adolis Garcia guy. Marcus Semien was good for where he was going. Josh Jung, I was like, whatever. All these guys just, they weren't doing for me. And now look at them this year. I mean, it's contagious. Everyone there is hitting. We'll talk about Jonah Heim in a bit. He's the number one catcher in all of fantasy. Ezekiel Duran near the bottom of the lineup. Every time I pop him in a DFS lineup, home run, home run. Leody Taveras at the bottom of the lineup doesn't even play every day, and he's like a top 40 player. So there's something here, right?
Yeah, I think the thing about baseball that's interesting, so, you know, from a football perspective, and we both mess around with football a little bit too, like from a football perspective, these guys are all like real correlated because they're actually interacting with each other on a play-by-play basis, right? Burrow throws a touchdown to Chase. They're both getting points for it. And so before the season in football, you can kind of do some extrapolating in terms of like, okay, I think this team's going to start running at a really high pace. This team's going to have like a pass rate over expectation of X. You know, it's really set up for like a lot of fantasy goodness for this team or whatever. It's not really the same in baseball, right? Baseball's an individual sport, you know, played as a team, but like, yeah, you know, Semien can drive in Leody Taveras or whatever, and you're going to, the counting stats are going to correlate. But, you know, as far as like the individual ratios, your individual home runs, things like that, you know, there really shouldn't be much of a correlation just from a statistical perspective. Obviously, you have some things like ballpark factors. You have teams like, say, Arizona, where the coach is just like, dude, y'all just run wild. And they do. And those are some kind of team context things that you can figure out beforehand. But I think the concept that you're bringing up is really interesting because, you know, to your point, there's not really any statistical proof that like, oh, yeah, hitting's contagious unless... You know, I don't know who anybody's hitting coach is, right? But I know who every football team's offensive coordinator is. And yeah, if you can figure that stuff out preseason, I think you're way ahead of the game. But like, all this stuff is already factored in by projection systems. Like the Bat X knows that Coors Field is a good hitting park. You know, it knows that the fences got moved back in Baltimore or whatever. So it's like, how do you figure this stuff out? And the best way I can think of it, Vlad, and tell me if you have any other theories, but it is almost looking at things from an individual level and saying, okay, you have a baseline for all these players, but I really think that five or six of them are poised to exceed that baseline. And that really raises the level of everybody. But it's really hard for me to just like preseason say, oh yeah, I think Tampa's going to have a great offense, so I want players from there. It's more like, I want player, you know, I think these Tampa guys are going to be good, so I want more of them. If I'm kind of, I feel like I'm going roundabout, but like, that's how it makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I've mentioned it before, and we've even talked about it on the podcast with when you and Eric Samulski were on, but I was into the Tampa Bay Rays because when I put together my VDP projections, all the Rays really popped out because they were later round guys that I liked individually.
Right.
The Josh Lowe's, the post hype guy,
the Yandy,
like all these guys I liked individually, they all popped up 50, 75 picks ahead of ADP. That's where I had them. And then I look and the early season schedule is the Tigers, the, you know, all these bad, you know, the A's, like the most immaculate schedule you can have to begin the year. And exactly as we hoped would happen occurred. And especially if you get all these guys late and you get this team kind of off and running, that's what happened. And they really just kind of took over April and they carried that momentum into some better series as they went into Boston and some other places. And they just kept winning. They went on an incredible streak. So there was something there. Of course they cooled off. It's baseball. Everything's so cyclical like that. But part of it all is also the draft capital of it, because you are getting these guys sort of, you know, so late. I will mention the correlation with Texas. And again, something we've talked about on this podcast before, I've been following this Donnie Ecker guy around, the hitting coach, who was the hitting coach for the San Francisco Giants 2 years ago when Brandon Crawford had his big breakouts, finally after like, you know, 15 years. Yastrzemski, Jock, like everybody was, I don't know if Jock was there at the time, but everybody just popped with Donnie Ecker. He moved on to the Rangers. Last year was kind of, you know, get familiar year. And then now this year, all these guys are popping off. So there definitely is some correlation there. And then, you know, like the D-backs you mentioned, Corbin Carroll walks in and wakes everybody up. You finally have a healthy Ketel Marte. Dude's hitting home runs like almost every day. He's a top 15 fantasy player right now.
Dude, I mean, you need to stop because this is tilting me so much. I've been in on Ketel Marte like every year. And finally this year, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm done with this guy who's hitting like five home runs and stealing one base. I'm good. Like it's, you know, it's not Ketel Marte season anymore. And instead it's Ketel Marte. I think he hit another one today. It's just like completely like just chapping my hide so badly.
Yeah. And I think there's something with kind of, you know, the, it's like the Corbin Carroll movement. He comes in there and just everybody's just feels good and pumped up and motivated. And they have this, you know, like this young leader that's just going in there and just crushing it. You got guys like Emmanuel Rivera is like hitting 400 for like a 3 week stretch, you know, against lefties and righty. Like it's really amazing what's going on over there. So yeah, there's something to it, but a lot of it has to do with also the last point I'll make on this is with the free agents. For the last like 5 weeks, every week among my 12 team recommended bids, I would always put in Eddie Rosario at the top. And granted, you know, some people might think he's washed. By the way, Mike Masato sent me a text message. Goes, by the way, Vlad, sorry, I'm adding you, Mike. He's like, Vlad, love the column. It's great. Like every 3 weeks, he gives me new suggestions. He's like, great column, everything. But by the way, you know, the term is washed up. It's not washed, right? And I'm thinking like to you, right? Because I know you use that term. And I'm thinking, I'm like, bro, this is how the kids, that's how we say it these days. Sorry, man. Washed up means washed. Like I have limited character space in my little grid. So sorry, it's washed. And,
yeah, you know, Masato's still doing like the Dave Letterman top tens. You know, he's like, yeah, I'll just do a Letterman spoof. And the kids don't even know who Dave Letterman is.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the guy that invented those jackets. But my point was, my only thing was whether he's washed up or not, he plays on the freaking Atlanta Braves. Yeah. You see a Brave on the free agent list, you pick him up. And he was the hottest hitter for like the first 3 weeks of June. I think he was the number one rated hitter in June in the National League across like eight different categories, like advanced metrics, standard metrics, like everything. And I mean, and every week in the OC, the 12 team OC, he was like 45% rostered, then only 57%. Then why was he moving so slowly when even though he continued to hit? Yeah, people would kind of chase all these guys. A Brave is available. Get these Braves. Orlando RC is mashing. Everyone is mashing. Get the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about like a fulcrum of offensive talent, Ronald Acuna is just like, I think I read today he's on pace for 40 homers and 73 steals. And you know, sometimes you're like, oh yeah, he's on pace for whatever. It's like, dude, Acuna's going to get there. You know, like this guy is not slowing down. He's like the greatest fantasy force that we've seen in, you know, since like the mid 90s. I mean, it's just like completely out of pocket. And God, the people who had the number one pick and didn't take Ronald Acuna, their faces are just melting off every single day right now.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine. Couldn't be me.
No,
but seriously, every draft that I had a one, and in past seasons, I mixed and matched. I remember last season, I was like, hey, you know what? I had a couple number one picks. Let me take Tatis this time. And, you know, hey, we know what happened with Tatis last year. So kind of learned my lesson. This year, there was no messing around. I think I got like four number one picks. I got Acuna every time. I got a fifth Acuna because I had a sixth overall pick, and somehow people got cute and decided to go in different directions.
Oh, is that gnarly OC where you got like Acuna and then Ohtani and then Strider or something like that?
Yes, that's the one.
That's so sick.
I need to keep climbing that puppy. We'll talk about it as we go through the positions, the Acuna effect, because everyone, it's not just Acuna. I mean, there are a lot of really great hitters on that team. They've constructed a monster, but just everyone's going off. It's been really nice. Starting with catchers, I mean, I think as we'd expect, some surprises among the top 15. I mean, these are guys you would kind of call your like C1s, your catcher ones in a 15-team league. I think the biggest surprise has been the aforementioned Jonah Heim. He's the number one catcher in fantasy value so far. He leads all catchers in RBI with, like, I don't know if he had one tonight on Tuesday night, but 55. He's on pace for 100+. So as we go into Wednesday, didn't count Tuesday here, the top 15 are Jonah Heim, Will Smith, Sean Murphy. I think Murphy just took over Will Smith. Sal Perez, one-eyed Sal. I think he had some surgery on his eye, but he's still available to pinch hit. Elias Diaz, another surprise for the Rockies, number 5. Varsho, number 6. Adley Rutschman, 7. Real Muto, 8th. Cal Raleigh, 9th. Wilson Contreras, Tyler Stevenson, William Contreras, Melendez. I don't know how he's in a 15. I guess it just shows you how weak the player pool is. Danny Jansen, who's probably like plays every like 4 days, is somehow 14th. Again, tells you a lot about the position. And then Francisco Alvarez. So that's your top 15 right there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Jonah Heim, is our buddy Yancey Eaton likes to call him, Jonah Him. The guy is just completely out of control. And it's like, to your point, it's the Texas effect. Like, you, if you look at the RBI and run leaders, they're just all Texas guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just Simeon, and yep, it's Adolis, and it's Jonah Heim. And it would be Corey Seager if Seager didn't miss time. I mean, he might be having the best season of all in the time that he's been out there. And so when you have these dudes just on base in front of you constantly, you know, it's just wheels up for Jonah Heim. I mean, the guy's out of control, and I wasn't even that big of a believer, but fortunately I have him in a main, which is real nice, I'll tell you, from personal experience.
That works. So would you say, so unbiased opinion, where he's at, I told you 55 RBI, what odds, I mean, what percentage would you give for him getting to 100?
Probably like 30-35%.
Okay, that's fair.
Somewhere in there. Definitely an underdog. Like, this stuff happens all the time where the guy's got 55 at the All-Star break and he ends with 88, right?
It's like they mostly do. Mostly slow down.
Yeah, and frankly, like, if you look at Jonah Heim's profile and his stats from the previous years, the projections, like, nothing really stands out. You're not like, oh, Jonah Heim, like, amazing. I mean, the guy's hitting, you know, 220 with some pop. And it's like, how is this guy different than, like, Cal Raleigh or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And instead, he's just been an absolute beast. And, you know, I'd love for him to keep it up all season. But I think the way that the baseball season is, it's long. And Texas will go through a swoon as well, probably, you know, right about now. And then it gets hot in August and the ball starts flying again or whatever. But, yeah, I think he's definitely an underdog, especially being a catcher. But, dude, when you got 55 and you got Corey Seager back and a lot of guys on base in front of you, I don't necessarily think it's going to be like a huge fall off for him.
A few other guys here to note. JT Realmuto does lead the position in stolen bases. He's the only guy with double digits. He's got 10. Wilson Contreras, shockingly, he's next. He's got 5. And there are 5 guys with at the position with ISOs over 230. One is Jake Rogers, who I think he's hitting like a buck 50, but he leads the team in home runs.
He makes the most of it.
Yeah, he's kind of a one-trick pony and specifically crushes lefties. You got Danny Jansen, Francisco Alvarez, Sean Murphy, and then Yainer Diaz. He's been kind of a nice surprise here.
A real nice surprise. Yainer Diaz may or may not be, like, when we're looking forward at the second half, there is going to be a handful of catchers that stand out that haven't really done a lot in the first half that end up being huge heroes. And I think Yainer Diaz, like, kind of profiles as that, right? He's essentially playing every day now. And certainly with Jordan out, it kind of frees some stuff up. But, like, he's making the most of those opportunities. And they've had the corpse of Maldonado behind the plate for a couple of years now. And, yeah, I mean, certainly there's, you know, kind of the old school thinking, oh, you know, he's good at defense, the pitching staff likes him, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, when Alvarez comes back and starts clogging up that DH spot, whether it's him at DH or, you know, him pushing somebody else to DH, it's like they're going to have to make some choices between Diaz and Maldonado. And it's kind of tough to make the case for Maldonado there.
Yeah. Yainer Diaz is really, he's cranking it pretty nicely. And then, I mean, there really is something to it. And another story from football, like we talked about how the Tampa Bay Bucks and the LA Rams, the two basically best teams from 2021. They were hit hard in camp with injuries, like literally everyone. If you remember, like the Bucks, it was, you know, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Russell Gage, like everybody was hurt. Tom Brady like went off, he disappeared for 3 weeks or something. And like, hey, what ended up happening? Like they got off to a slow start and they just never got it together. Same thing with the Rams.
Their O-line too. Like the Bucks O-line was decimated, and that was like a bad sign. Yeah.
And like a key defender. And the same thing with the Rams, right? Like Stafford, and just, there were just bad vibes in camp. And so correlating this to like the Houston Astros, for example, okay, you let Verlander go. Jose Altuve gets hurt. Jordan Alvarez was having issues before. Like, you know, sometimes these things just kind of end up going in the direction they were originally expected to. And Jose Abreu hadn't hit a home run for, you know, for God knows how long, and kind of see how things ended up there. So just, you know, something to kind of think about also for next season.
Well, and to your point, I think when these things sort of happen, sometimes with some teams, we just kind of brush it off, right? With the Bucks, like the Astros, we're just like, oh, they're great. Like they will be fine. And it's like, and so we kind of give them a pass because they've been good for the last like 3-4 years. That's not how sports work. You know what I mean? Like they're fallible, just like every other franchise, just like every other club, because it's a collection of human beings. And, you know, you get these vibes, you see the writing on the wall. Sometimes it's really good to kind of take by and be like, oh, this is just a great franchise no matter what. And just understand, like, dude, teams can't come back from certain things. It's just not possible.
Yeah, exactly. And a couple other guys of note. Sal Perez is currently the only catcher on pace for 25 plus homers. I'm sure a couple guys will get there. And then Kyber Ruiz, not really all that fantasy exciting, but what is impressive is his 8% strikeout rate. So, and contact rate actually leads the position at 88%. So just, you know, one of those guys, not necessarily all that great for fantasy, former Dodger prospect, but he's interesting. I did want to ask you about
another Dodger prospect that you guys, you know, for you know, Magic Beans, and you know, some other franchise took him, and they're like, oh, this is our guy, and you know, didn't pan out.
Yeah, it happens that like that sometimes. I thought he was the second coming. He had a home run in his first ever plate appearance. I remember a major league plate appearance. One of those guys, Sean Murphy, by the way. So he's a career 244 hitter. Dude hit another bomb on Tuesday night. He's currently hitting over 290. He's got a xBA of right around that same thing. And then a BABIP that's about 60 points over his career mark. So it's like 344. And we kind of saw a lot of this. We kind of saw this coming, right? I mean, he's a dude that hits the ball really hard. Obviously great. Played on the Oakland A's, was sort of buried there for a little bit. And then he comes to this powerhouse team. You kind of figured something like this would happen to this effect, but like he has a good shot to end up as the C1, even if he doesn't play every day. Like Travis d'Arnaud is pretty good. He gets in there sometimes, you know, one of them's DH, whatever, but Sean Murphy in that lineup can easily be the C1 come into the year.
I mean, I don't see why not. Like, to your point, dude, he's the cleanup hitter for Atlanta. I mean, they bat him fourth. He hits fifth. Sometimes he's in the middle of one of the best lineups in baseball. And at the end of the day, you know, he's going to get the requisite amount of counting stats. Like that's just the position that he's in. And then he's got these jokels at the bottom of the lineup. It's like, you know, Eddie Rosario and Marcelo Zuna, the corpses of these guys who have somehow been reanimated. You got Michael Harris down there. He's actually been on a little bit of a roll. It's like this lineup top to bottom is just stacked. It's ill. And so, yeah, you have a guy in the middle of there. Like, I mean, it's just kind of wheels up for him.
And you know what? On my best main event, I did land Sean Murphy. I didn't get a lot of him in season because during, you know, the draft champion season and everything, like he was going pretty high, especially after he had signed February, March. He was going like 100 to 120 overall. So like, you know, seventh, eighth round. And then come main event, because all the pitchers got pushed up, somebody had to get pushed down. And so a lot of the catchers did. So I'm thinking back to draft season, and I didn't land a good deal on him. I think it was like 156. So this is already, you know, 11th round. And this is around, you know, all those catchers got pushed down. So MJ Melendez was there and Alejandro Kirk was there. And I'm thinking back how I feel like I made a good gut decision in that case. I always don't, you know, you don't always make the decision. But instead of me just like looking at my spreadsheet and being like, oh, I really need batting average, let me get Alejandro Kirk, or, you know, Melendez. Something didn't feel right about Melendez either. It was like that ballpark and that big season, rookie season. Things didn't feel right. And then I'm just like, you know what? Sean Murphy, Braves, you know, just old caveman style. And that's what I did. And so far looks like the right answer. Sometimes
God, I wish I had not looked at the spreadsheet. I have a little too much Kirk in my life. It's not working out.
Did you end up having to drop them anywhere and any 12 teamers or anything like that?
No, I'm actually not playing any 12s this year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's all 15 teams. So it's like when you have a hold Andrew Kirk in a 15, you're like, oh shit, I gotta hold this guy. Like, what am I gonna do?
Yeah, yeah, and that's like the worst thing. You hate having to sit your put a catcher on the bench and carry a third guy. But I think those are one of the cases where they do. By the way, some people just let them roll in the lineup and take the zero. But that is also kind of dangerous too. I feel like it's kind of like the lazy way sometimes, and not everyone may agree. But sometimes, I mean, you could have a negative effect, right? Like if it was only Martin Maldonado and you happen to catch him on what is usually a bad week for him, and then you get like an 0 for 30 or whatever. I mean, it won't be that many at bats, but usually it's a negative. But if you really kind of do your homework, you can find somebody. There's always like a Matt Dice or, not Yonier Diaz, but somebody that you could pick up that'll get you.
People are dropping Blake Sable. You know what I mean? Like he'll get some ABs for you.
Yeah, so sometimes it's worth it because especially if you lose your main event by like a run, it happens. People, you know, it happens. So I'm not a big fan of taking those zeros if I can at least help it. I don't know. That's kind of enough about catchers. Just real quick, any breakout that you like for the second half, just in terms of not breakout like a new guy, but somebody who you think will have a better second half than they did first half?
Yeah, your favorite guy, actually, MJ Melendez.
Oh.
I'm in on Melendez. So like his Statcast stuff is really good, man. Like he's got a 95.5 MPH line drive and fly ball exit velocity that leads the position. And then his 51.7% hit, I think, is. And dude, I just always like catchers. I like the cheat code catchers. I like the catchers who qualify a catcher and don't play it. Catcher. Like Dalton Varsho. MJ Melendez. I mean, his first half, Melendez is crap. I think he's like, you know, 210 average, 6 homers, 2 steals, something like this. It's just awful. But the guy hits the ball hard and he plays every single day and he's, you know, anywhere from second to fourth. And so I think when you add those things up, I don't expect him to ever be like a huge batting average guy, but he was a guy, I think, in the minors 2 years ago, he hit 40 jacks, right? Like, I think putting those things together, like, you know, things are looking up for MJ Melendez. I think he has a much bigger second half than he did in the first.
Yeah, it has to. I mean, just kind of has to catch up with, especially when you look at that Statcast data. My guy's William Contreras. I actually like both Contreras's to have better second halves. They're just very mediocre first half. So I think we'll see some improvement there. As usual, I'm way behind pace on because we just got through one position. So, first base, so top 10 here. Freddie Freeman, no surprise at the top. Matt Olson, really close to him. Pete Alonso, not Pat, among the home run leaders. He's third. Christian Walker, fourth. Goldie, 5. Spencer Steer, 6th. Yandy Diaz plays both, you know, first and third eligible. He's 7th. Justin Turner, first and third eligible. He's 8th. Luis Arias, number 9. And then Josh Naylor, he's 10. So that's the guy I wanted to ask you about first. Man, this guy's been incredible. I mean, to me, surprising. This is me researching for the show. I don't have much Josh Naylor in my life, so I was looking through Monday's games. He's top 5 in baseball in RBI. He's got 57. Big thing, though, is huge differential with his runs. He's got 30 less runs than he does RBI. Barrel is, you know, I mean, Statcast stuff is all right. You know, I mean, it's decent. It's like 10% barrel rate, 45% hard hit. He's hitting 290 right now. He's got an XBA of 300. He's got 10 homers, 5 stolen bases. Seems kind of solid. What do you think about Josh Naylor for the rest of the season?
I feel like the Padres could use a guy like that. No, why can't the Padres find a guy like Josh Naylor? I just don't understand.
What's wrong with
Crony? I mean, you sent me the show notes, dude, and you were like showing the stats. And I'm like, wait, is that true? Like, I had no idea either. Because I don't have any Josh Naylor. Like, forget Josh Naylor. Instead, he's doing better than the first baseman that I drafted. I mean, it's just very, very insulting to me personally. I mean, God, it kind of feels like, if I'm like going gut, it kind of feels like a mirage. Not that Josh Naylor is bad by any stretch, but when you are in the middle of a pretty bad lineup and you're able to drive in this many runs, I know it happens, but like Josh Naylor's okay. You know, he's not that good. So I don't know. I feel like you're probably seeing the top end of what he's going to produce.
Yeah, I think he's one of the guys. I mean, I think he has a better shot at 100 ribbies than Jonah Heim, for example. And yeah, just kind of work from function of where he hits in the lineup and kind of breaks up Jose Ramirez and Josh Bell kind of nicely. I think he's much better than Josh Bell at this point in his career, both fantasy and real life. A couple other things here at first base. Matt Olson, so, you know, he's leading the NL basically in homers and ribbies. That's not at all shocking. But, like, you know, where were you on him in the preseason? Because he was one of those guys where, you know, hey, it's nice to grab power there, but I think we're all kind of like stolen base hungry. And then you also want a closer. You also want a good starting pitcher. So sometimes he just wasn't part of the plan. And we have those guys, players we like, but you can't have everyone. It just kind of depends how you're building. But with now stolen bases sort of top of mind and knowing that we really, I guess, need a lot of them, probably need a lot next year, for this new landscape in 2024, I mean, and he ends up like as a second rounder, right? Like think Pete Alonso a couple years ago off the big home run season. Now he's a second rounder. The same thing with Goldie after last year. He was, I think, you know, second rounder as well, kind of fell as draft season came. But like Matt Olson's going to be a pretty legit like end of the first round, early second without the stolen bases. Is that somebody you can work with in your draft plan, or will you just like fully avoid him because of the stolen bases?
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to say nah on Matt Olson. And I think the reason is this, and this is coming from somebody who I took Pete Alonso in the second a lot this year, right? I'm a big Alonso guy, and I feel like Matt Olson is like 90% Pete Alonso. So it's like I kind of feel like I'm kind of hypocritical. But I think the challenge with Matt Olson, it's not that you can't take four category producers early in the draft. The strong four category producer, right? He doesn't steal and hit for average. And so you're essentially saying, okay, this guy is going to be really, really good in three categories, but he's probably going to be a net negative in two. To me, that's just I want to take early in the draft, right? But to your point, I'd rather take ace starting pitching. I'd rather take kind of fill up the plate as opposed to a guy who's, if he has any sort of dip in his power production, he's a wasted pick, essentially. You know, if he only hits 30 homers and drives in 90, it's like, that seems good. But if you took it in the middle of the second round, that's not good at all. So to me, I think I really like Matt Olson. I like the Braves. I think everything going on there is fantastic. But in terms of like where you're going to place him in the draft, just not really a spot I'd like to build. And, you know, the reason pretty high on Alonso in the second this year is because I thought he had upside in batting average and not necessarily like a 300 hitter, but able to hit plus homers and hit 260, 270 in that range. And, you know, John Legeza kind of got me onto that track in terms of the falling strikeout rate that could lead to a better batting average. That's kind of why I see Alonso as kind of a like one step up and a guy I'm more willing to take a chance on in that range.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a tough it's a tough spot with those guys that don't, and especially when you're buying in on like a monster year. I mean, all those Braves are going to be pushed up, and especially if he ends up with like 135 RBI and just like, you know, kind of puts in that like mini Judge season, but without the stolen bases,
right?
He'll get a lot of love. Just real quick, bounce back guy. If you had to pick one for the second half, and sorry to take you down here to the dregs, but it's Ryan Mountcastle or Rowdy Tellez.
Ooh. Well, I mean, this is pretty tough. So if you look at the two guys, they actually project out really similar. Like if you just take it to the projection streets, you know, they Mountcastle a little better average, Tellez a little more power. But I think the thing is this, like, I don't love somebody with vertigo. Like it seems kind of bad to me. And right now Mountcastle's, you know, is on a rehab assignment. Like he should be back. Obviously the Orioles lineup is like pretty freaking good, but I think I'm a Tellez guy in this spot. And I think, I mean, one of the cheat codes, I think, over the last like 5 years has been left-handed hitters going to Milwaukee. I mean, yeah. our boy Christian Yelich, right? Omar Narvaez, the first year he got there. They've had a ton of left-handed hitters that have gotten to Milwaukee and done really well. And I think it's a really good spot for Tellez. So I'd side with him, I think.
Yeah, that's a good call in the vertigo. That's not obviously not ideal. And he was supposed to be back on Tuesday. He's still not back in the lineup. So a little tough here. We'll visit the hot corner super quick. And there's obviously a few guys here with multi-eligible positionality, if that's even a word. But Bobby Witt Jr., really heavy with the stolen bases and on pace for 45 or so. He's number one at the position. Jose Ramirez is right there. Rafael Devers, ever so consistent. Josh Jung's number four. Again, Spencer Steer, we're going to have to talk about him in a minute. I just can't pass it up. Yandy Diaz, Justin Turner again. Austin Riley's got to pick up the pace at some point to earn that second-round value that we all, some of us got in on. Nolan Arenado, again, always so consistent. And then Ryan McCann just kind of snuck in there near the top 10. Guys that can possibly crack the top 10 in the second half. You got Gunnar Henderson, Max Muncy, if he can stay healthy and not hit a .150. Alex Bregman can sort of peter along, and I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen with Altuve not healthy and Jordan not healthy. And then your boy Machado, I never claimed him as my boy as a Dodger fan. It just kind of never felt right. I even saw something of him in a Dodger uniform. I like looked back at like some highlights from that season when we picked him up the deadline. It didn't feel right. There was just, I think it was something, remember he like tripped somebody up. Maybe it was a Padre, I forget, but look, it was like something intentional. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I mean, the guy is on people. He's always doing some stuff. Gets a lot of grief. And then when he gets, you're like, oh, hell yeah, we got Manny Machado. Like, this is going to be great. And he was fantastic last year. I mean, he was a legit MVP candidate. And, you talk about teams with bad vibes, man. Like, feels like the Padres have just, like, had those bad vibes. And, Manny's not helping things out any, I don't think.
And do you follow that and Tutokempo Padres guy, he's super fan.
Yeah,
he had a great. Yeah, he had a great thread, like kind of unraveling things with AJ Preller being like a super micromanager and thing. Like, I mean, I'm sure obviously he's got his intel, whatever. But I don't know. Do you want to expand on that a little bit? I don't know if you saw that thread or kind of heard about what was going on the inside.
Yeah, I did. I mean, just essentially this is going to be like a bastardization of this entire thread that he put together, but essentially like what the real good organizations do is the people at the top delegate, right? And it's just like any company. And then you manage the managers. So you have like four different arms of the organization and you manage the people who are in charge of the arms. And essentially what he's saying is Preller doesn't do that. He micromanages every single part of the organization and it's really toxic. And I've always liked Preller because he just like goes for it, like he de-gaffs. He's willing to spend money. He's willing to trade signings, all this stuff. And from a historically kind of small market team who has just kind of let itself be a loser, to have somebody who actually tries and actually goes for it, I mean, that's awesome. And so, it's just always been a Preller fan, but really peeling back the curtain in terms of, the job, like being a GM is not just signing people and creating it. I mean, managing an organization in many respects. And if you've ever been part of a company where the CEO was toxic or the vice president was toxic or whatever that looked like, it really filters down. And, our boy made a pretty compelling case that the Preller has some bad vibes going on in that regard. So, it kind of is what it is. But I feel like if you have Fernando Tatis and you have Manny Machado and you have Juan Soto, who's the GOAT. How are you under 500? It's really
shocking.
It's shocking. I mean, shocking. And there are people who are like, oh, I didn't think the Padres were that good. And it's like that's fine. But to have this kind of star power and be under 500, have players like Rougned Odor, like starting for you, like I said, 5 days a week. I mean, dude, how do you do that? How do you spend $250 million and have these giant holes in your roster? It's kind of unacceptable. So, maybe Preller's not the guy I thought he was. Who knows?
I was going to say, one of the other reasons why I have you on the show, because I learn like new slaying from you every single week, and you just like kind of blow my mind, and then it just somehow ends up in my lexicon of vocabulary. Like, you said something I'd never heard before, and I'm sure most people missed it. Maybe the young kids said, but you said degaff, and then I got it midway through. I'm like, you said something like degaffed, and I guess you mean that stands for don't give an F, don't give it, right? And that's what you're, but you shortened it. That was cool, man. I didn't know that was a thing.
I spend entirely much time on Twitter, man. That's my only excuse for this.
Yeah, I like it, man. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, to your point, like kicking it back to third base, I think, you know, this is a spot, like you're looking at dudes who can potentially like bounce back in the second half. I mean, maybe I'm kind of Pollyanna here, but I think Manny Machado kind of heads that long track record of success in a lineup, at least in a spot where he should be able to put up counting stats and produce. I think spot, you know, you mentioned Rafael Devers, who he's got the home runs and he's got the RBIs. I think he's only hitting like 240, but we're talking about like 30 points lower than his expected stats would say. So he's a guy that's kind of naturally like, oh yeah, he should have a better second half than he did in the first two. And that's kind of scary because he's already pretty good. And buddy, I don't know what's up with this Spencer Steer business. Like, I don't understand it, but it's happening. It's not happening on any of my teams, and I wish it was. But the guy's pretty. Like, even if you look back at the minors, the last couple of years, he hit 24 and 23 home runs. You know, solid like plate discipline metrics. I mean, the guy looks like a solid player. He was a little old for his levels, which I think is one of the reasons why the prospect people never liked him, but. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're playing fantasy baseball. We staff. You know, I think he's a guy that's been a real, real pleasant surprise for people that took him.
Yeah, I missed that. I mean, not only did I miss it, I purposely avoided it. I was on the, for whatever reason, you know, sometimes these things just get in your head and you're like, this guy's just not going to be good. And every time you see somebody like amping him up on Twitter, it makes you dislike him more. And then you're playing fantasy wrong because you're,
you start digging in.
You start digging my heels in. But man, that's another example of just everything going right. You already have the good home park context, right? I mean, the ball just flies in that ballpark, and you add Matt McClain with him and his 450 BABIP, and Ali De La Cruz, and just like Joey Votto came back, and India's hitting. Like, the team is looks good, right? They can even win the division. So it's just funny how that happens, you know?
God, be so cool to be a fan of and this kind of happened to the Padres, but be a fan of a team that's like so crappy for so long, and then all of a sudden they just get this infusion of talent and you're like, dude, this team is fun and they're kind of good. And I think that's the Reds right now. Like, the Reds are they're the new Padres, because people like nobody hated the Padres because we never win anything, so like nobody cares. And we get a couple good players and people are like, oh, the Padres are fun. And now we kind of suck. And I think the Reds have taken that mantle as like the lovable losers who are actually kind of good now.
Yeah, it just looks like a fun team to root for. Like, hey, you want to bandwagon a team in the NL Central? That seems like the one, because ain't nobody getting behind the Cardinals right now.
That's right. If you're an A's fan and you're looking for another bandwagon to jump off of, you know, get on to the Reds, man. They got plenty of room. Get on there.
Yeah, they'll probably make some trades too. Maybe like gonna have to add an arm, right? There's gonna be somebody out there in the market. Might be nice.
Because that Lodolo Green thing was not great.
Yeah. Again, you gotta keep Ashcraft in the minors too. Second base here, top 10. It kind of falls out after the top. It's kind of top heavy. You got Marcus Semien. You got Mookie Betts, who's technically a second baseman, second base eligible, earned it in season. He's second there. He's mashing again. Ketel Marte is third. Ozzie Albies is fourth. Jonathan India, five. Nico Horner, Tyro Estrada, Luis Arias again. Isaac Paredes getting it done, not even playing every day. And then Bryson Stott. I'm kind of happy about that one. That kind of worked out for me. One of my preseason targets.
Yeah, you're big on Albies too, right?
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe good time for a back pat. I usually do one of those once a pod, but I got a lot of clap back from people when I posted good things about Albies for at his ADP. And I didn't end up with a lot of them, just the way that, you know, rosters were constructed, whatever. But I was very much hitting that bandwagon of he's going to be the number two hitter there at some point. It's also, you know, Michael Harris was very much my biggest fade, and I think that was very evident. But yeah, Michael Harris has been great. He's been fantastic. He could get up there and hit second again at some point. I mean, sure, he deserves it. But Albies, man, he leads the position in home runs. He's got 18. He's sitting in literally like the best spot in baseball. It does not get any better than hitting two right there. Like with Acuna ahead of you, you got Riley Olson Murphy behind you. Like it's just perfect. And he's getting it done. You just look at the box scores every single day. And again, hitting is contagious. Actually, that'll be the name of the episode. That makes sense.
I love it.
I love what I'm seeing Albies is doing this season.
Yeah, I think you know, we think of Albies. Nobody like
Albies, an accumulator. He's an accumulator.
Yeah, he's an accumulator. Like, and he also seems older than he is because he came up at like 20 years old. And I mean, they said the same things about Lindor. Lindor is an accumulator. Well, guess what? Fantasy baseball is about accumulating. Like, if at the top of FBC standings, the teams that win the overall, that they're in contention, they're all among the league leaders in plate appearances and at-bats. They're all among the, yep, the you know, NFBC leaders in innings pitch. You are trying to accumulate stats. The last time we saw Ozzie Albies play a full season, hit 30 homers and stole bases. I mean, yes, he's a prospect along the lines of Ronald Acuna, but very few are. You know, the reality is if this guy gets volume, he's going to put up the stats because he doesn't really have his game, right? He can hit for average. He can hit home runs. He can steal bases. He doesn't do any of these things in overabundance. He's not a 330 hitter. He's not a 40 home run guy. He's not a 30 steal guy. But when you have these players that fill up the box score consistently and he's on a really good team, fantasy player. And the guy's been in the league for like 7 years. He's 26 years old. I mean, yeah, these guys generally that have this kind of pedigree, players that show up in the major leagues and have success at 20 years old, they tend to be really good players. We shouldn't forget that about Ozzie Albies.
Yeah, it's a good point. And yet another Brave. Luis Arraez, I do got to ask you, give me a number. Where does he end up at for the season in batting average? I'm going to go with 369. Sorry if I took your number, by the way.
No, it is a very nice number, and I appreciate that. God. I mean, screw it, man. 401. Let's go.
Let's go.
Arraez was actually my most owned player last season because he was going like post 20th round and he was eligible and he has one defining skill, obviously. And so I was so pumped last year when he like hit eight homers and stole eight bases. I was just like, oh, this is amazing. Way more than I expected. It's really cool to see a throwback player like Arraez, right? The sabermetric guy. He doesn't really hit for power and is on base, you know, and, you know, whatever. You know, the reality is it is fun to have a throwback player who just like hits for a sick average. And, you know, the launch angle guys, you know, the exit velocity guys, it's like, yo, dude, you have a dude who's chasing 400 at that point of the season. I think it's one of the cooler stories we've had in a while.
Dude, yeah, it's pretty incredible. Going to shortstop here. Wander Franco and Bo Bichette essentially at the top there. Fernando Tatis, despite missing 20 games, incredible. He's there number three. Bobby Witt, who, as I had mentioned, was the number one third baseman. He's only the fourth shortstop, so just something there to think about. Francisco Lindor, who leads the position in ribbies. He's got, I think he had a couple more. So he's got like 55. Yep. But he's hitting like 225, man. So it's you know, it's not good on that front, but he's number five. Nico Horner, again, leadoff man, sometimes number two for the Cubs. Thairo Estrada, again, nice little bounce back. Corey Seager is nine, even though he's missed a big chunk of the season. And then Bryson Stott is 10th. I did tweet earlier today, and it's funny. I tweeted this, and well, let me tell you what I tweeted first. I said that Corey Seager basically has the same number of ribbies. He's got more now. He's got the same number of ribbies as Bo Bichette in 133 less plate appearances.
That's sick. It's just sick. I mean, Corey, a big target of mine this year, because you could essentially pencil him in the fourth round, right? And
so many people wanted. Everyone I talked to was like, I got to get Seager in the fourth. I know he doesn't steal, but I got to get Seager in the fourth. They knew. We all knew.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, you take your steals guys early. You don't take the four category guys in the second round or the first round. You just take Corey Seager. Easy game.
Yeah, dude. And that's funny is like the Bobish. I got Insta replies from anyone that has like Bobichette in their handle. And I was like, guys, oh, take it easy. This is not Bichette slander. I love Bo Bichette. I think he went like 3 for 3 again today. Dude's hitting like 330. He's a beast. Nothing against Bo Bichette. But obviously, you know, George Springer and the back end of those lineups just aren't getting on base like the Leody Taveras's and Ezekiel Duran's of the world. That's really all it is. But it is quite a huge differential there.
Here's a fun stat for you, Vlad. Over his career, Fernando Tatis, and this is why Tatis was going like end of the first, early second round, for 162 games in his career, Fernando Tatis Jr. is averaging 47 home and 32 steals.
That's insane.
It's so
ridiculous.
So sick. So, you know, I think the thing that was really not quite as much this year, but definitely last year when there wasn't any one number one pick, is that there's two players, I think, in the majors who have legitimate 40-40 potential, and that's Acuna and Fernando Tatis. And then there's one pitcher who's just so much better than everybody else, and that's Jacob DeGrom. Obviously, he's gone down with his Tommy John. But last year, none of them could, like, really go first overall. You know what I mean? And now we're in a spot, obviously, DeGrom's hurt, but now we're in a spot where, you know, Acuna is, like, right as rain. He's healthy. And he is going to bust 40-40. I have no doubt about that. And Fernando Tatis, dude, he could legitimately give it a run, even despite missing almost a full month. I'm sure he won't get there, but like the people who took him, and I wasn't an early Fernando Tatis Jr. guy. I was like, oh, bad vibes. This guy's, you know, got shoulder injuries, all this stuff. Like, he's missing time off the bat. You know, it's just a little riskier. But man, the guy's just completely bonkers. And I think when we look at the number one pick next year, you know, people are talking about like Corbin Carroll. Obviously, it'll be Acuna, like no doubt. Mm-hmm. But when you start looking at the number two pick next year, I think Fernando Tatis has to be in that conversation.
Yes, yes. I mean, so long as he still stays healthy, makes it through the rest of the season, just continues to do what a typical Fernando Tatis does. I mean, he's going to be an easy. Like in that conversation, it's like, you know, 2 through 5, you can make a case for different people. What one thing we do know, pitchers will not be in there, especially the Burns disaster, Cole being mid. Like I think it's going to be like a year of the hitter next year. I could feel it already.
Well, we all thought that would happen this year too. And instead, pitchers, and like, just like we always do.
Trey Turner, got to ask you about him, of course. First half disappointment. Apparently he's made some like adjustment, like I think minimized his leg kick or something like that. But anyways, he's been a little better over the last couple of weeks. Still striking out a bit, but where do you see him landing among the shortstops from like now to the end of the season? Like, where would you put him overall? Just forget all the first half stats. Like, from tomorrow on, where would he be among the shortstops?
Yeah, I think he's a borderline top five guy. And, you know, for a guy that was going borderline top five overall, that's a disappointment, right? But how can you take him over somebody like Bobby Witt Jr.? Like, how can you take him over Bo Bichette? You know, you stack him up against Corey Seager, it's like, okay, it depends on what you need, but man, it's kind of tough to say, oh, I'd take Trey Turner for sure over Corey Seager, depending on if I had other speed on that team. You know, I think the reality is, you know, Trey on the Dodgers was kind of special because, especially in those later years, you know, I think like last year, third a lot, right? So he was, he doesn't have a ton of home run power. I mean, you know, he'll pop some out for sure, but he's not a 35 home run guy, but he could still dive in 100 runs. And when you get him on Philadelphia, who, you know, they batted him leadoff for most of the year, and then they swapped him and Schwarber trying to like get that stuff. And you know, his RBI opportunities, they were gonna go way down, and they have. And I think Trey, when you talk to Laters, Trey's one of those guys, right? And I don't know that you necessarily want to take the accumulators early. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Trey's mm-hmm. not as fast as he is. He's not necessarily a 40 steal guy. As good of pop as he has, he's not necessarily a 30 homer guy. And so he doesn't have, like, obviously he's been a really good batting average guy. That's kind of like the elite trait that he has. But again, he's not batting 330, something like that. So, like, he's a guy that is, I think, is more defined by a lack of weakness than it is, you know, some calling card of, like, statistical dominance. And when a guy like that has some sort of drop-off, even a 10% drop-off, something like that, all of a sudden you have a very, not a bad player, but more of a pedestrian player, a player that people are having a lot of regrets taking in the first round. And I think sometimes we need to step away from the projections a little bit and say, like, who is just an absolute complete stud? Is it Trey Turner, who's, you know, 180 pounds sopping wet? Or is it Acuña? You know what I mean? Yeah, and like, yeah. When you look at it like that, it's like, oh, Acuña's a beast and Turner's like this pretty nice. It's Ronald Acuña. So I don't know. I think Trey's going to be, he's hitting under 250 right now. I don't see that continuing. I think his bat to ball skills are still really good. I don't see him like having that low of a batting average. But when you look at what he's going to end the season with, if he ends the season with something like, I don't know, 17 homers, 24 steals, it's like, okay, that's a pretty good player. But I mean, Marcus Semien was out doing that every year, and Marcus Semien went in the third round this year. So
yep.
I don't know. At some point, I think probably this is a little bit of the end of Trey Turner as like the best player in fantasy, and more like those guys who, okay, it's the second round, it's the third round, I need some speed. I think Trey Turner is a solid player. Like, let's go get him now.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think it was like Bob Cramatoli is a big Philadelphia Phillies fan, and he gave me some crap about, he's like, oh yeah, we got Turner now, and you know, sorry for you, and you know, just kind of joking around. And I was like, you know, actually, Bob, I'm like, you know, no offense, but I'm like, I'm off the Phillies this year. Like, and it reflected in my VDP, like outside of Bryson Stott, who actually spent a good chunk of the season leading off and having some pretty good numbers. He was the one guy that was just not popular in ADP. You could always get him like 225, 250. But the rest of, I was just off on this offense, and it had something to do with like the preseason vibes, to be honest. It was, you know, they're already starting the year without Bryce Harper. I kind of looked at the lineup, wasn't loving it. Kyle Schwarber's price coming off that monster season, Castellanos being kind of mid, Real Muto being a second rounder catcher, no thanks. I wasn't into it. Even Wheeler, for whatever reason, there were always other pitchers that I preferred there. And even the closer situation was a mess. I was like, okay, maybe I'll take a late round Sir Anthony Dominguez stab. But for the most part, it was just kind of a stand I made. I was like, you know, no, I'm not really going after these Phillies. And I didn't have quite that. That's a great way you put it. It's like, but Acuña, you know, Turner. And you think of Trey Turner is like, you know, looks like Adam Scott, basically, you know, his doppelganger, you know, and I just, him, Jose Ramirez, I just wasn't doing it this year. Like, I had specific guys that I wanted if I was getting around that range, and he just wasn't one of them. You know, at some point you got to make those stands, but yeah, all in all, despite saying everything, even if the Phillies don't have much success in the second half, Bryce Harper continues to struggle, whatever, you still have to count on a Trey Turner bounce back. It'd be very hard to see him just kind of duplicate what he's done this first half, and just see him just kind of piddle along for the rest of the year. There has to be something good. And if not, you know, people are just going to blame the WBC, which I think is also a load of crap.
Yeah, the WBC is freaking awesome. I don't know how people hate on that. It's so brutal.
Yeah, they killed Altuve.
I mean, you got to see,
that's what they say.
You got to see Otani. Wasn't that what, didn't Otani like strike out Trout to like put that thing away? I mean,
it didn't get any better. I mean, that's foreshadowing of an Angels World Series, isn't it? I mean, yeah. What else could it be?
I think so. By the way, sorry to bring this up, but did you see what happened to Otani today? I heard he got taken.
Yeah, busted a fingernail and then hit a home run, pulled out of the game and hit a home run the next at bat.
Oh my God. What a complete boss. He's probably, I was playing poker last night. I was at a poker table and the Angels game was on. And so people were talking about Otani and they're like, you know, someone's like, oh, I think he might be the best player in baseball. And I'm like, yo, dude, I think he might be the best baseball player that's ever lived. that's ever existed. Yeah. Like, we need to start talking about that. I mean, when we're talking about like the number two pick next year, I mean, Ohtani's like in that conversation. Yeah.
I mean, right now he's the best hitter in baseball, and one of the best pitchers. So how can you not? And this whole, you know, this whole silly argument that some people had earlier in the season, it was almost like the lazy, well, I don't know when, you know, I don't want to deal with when he's going to lock up my utility. I don't know when to use him in hitter or pitcher. No, just get him. And then you'll figure it out as the season goes. It's called fantasy.
That is beta behavior. And the reason I think it's beta behavior is it's because he's giving you options, right? You have options with this player. It's up to you as the fantasy manager to optimize this. Like, figure, like, you have like the most talented baseball player that's ever spent or stepped, and he is a wonderful fantasy hitter and a wonderful fantasy pitcher. It's like, yo, dude, like, I don't want to deal with it. Like, do you deal with decisions every day? It's the kind of decision that you want. Like, yeah, you got to figure it out. I never
had that thinking. Gen Z, man, I just want to optimize it, set it and forget it, bro. I don't even know the generations.
Tough scene, Gen Z. Get it together.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Sorry, gals. All right, outfield, let's do it here. Kick things off. I'm going to throw the top 20, and this is through Monday. I'm going to list them out. We could talk about them. You know, the man needs no introduction. Ronald Acuna Jr. at the top. Corbin Carroll second. Adolis Garcia third. They both hit homered on Tuesday night. Randy Arozarena fourth. Mookie Betts. Luis Robert Jr. sixth. Lane Thomas, what? Seventh. Julio Rodriguez, Tatis, Yelich, get you through the top 10. 11 and 12 are two guys I haven't played in a while. Jordan Alvarez and Aaron Judge, go figure. Josh Lowe is 13. Casty, 14. Soto, Trout, Soler, Esturi Ruiz at 18. Just stole his 40th base, and we're not even at halfway through the season yet. And he's hitting ninth now, by the way. Kyle Tucker, kind of a bust, but yet still somehow the 19th outfielder. And then George Springer, 20th. Some interesting guys near the top there. Jake Fraley from the Reds, doesn't even play every day. Austin Hayes has been leading off for the Orioles against lefties. Yoshida and Verdugo for the Red Sox. And then Luke friggin' Raley. Speaking of Fraley, got Raley there. Him and Josh Lowe were both competing for a spot on the team on the Rays for that last spot. They both earned it and then some. So those guys are looking good. And then Leody Taveras, a top 30 outfielder, the number 9 hitter sometimes for the Texas Rangers.
I mean, that's completely hand. I mean, some of these guys, bro, like you write your this year's Christian Yelich column every year. What if this year's Christian Yelich is Christian Yelich? I mean, he's having a really good season. He's been really hot lately. I think people wrote him off for dead a little too fast.
Yeah, no, he's nice for the price and everything. And even in the midst of that kind of horrific offense, like, it's just an offense, you play DFS, you're like, you just like auto pass. You're like, I'm just not interested. You're like, maybe I might play Yelich, but you can't. And you look at Telez around there, Adamas strikes out a whole bunch. Like, you're playing Owen Miller in the top of the lineup. Like, nah, no thanks. So, but yeah, that's a good call.
I don't think I realized. I knew Josh Lowe is having a great season. He's got 18 freaking stolen bases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, out of control. And these guys like Luke Raley, I think, you know, we were talking about the Rays earlier and, you know, how depressed their prices were. And I think part of the reason is because the Rays have this reputation for platooning everybody, right? So you get guys like Isaac Paredes and Luke Raley and, you know, Jose Siri and these guys who we know are talented. Maybe not this season, but we kind of figuring it out now. But you don't get the at-bats. And so you kind of stay on. I think that may be a mistake. I think we're
Can
seeing
you repeat that part? I'm sorry, I missed the – what might be a mistake?
Oh, it might be a mistake to look at these guys – because they were essentially going where the teams went. In your VDP, you had these guys higher, but playing time changes throughout the season. You know what I mean? And so when you have a guy, say like Luke Raley or Jose Siri, who you're like, oh, well, I can only pencil this guy in for 300 or 400 plate appearances, I think you're kind of doing yourself a disservice, especially late in the draft. You're looking for guys who can make big potential. And if they do well, they're going to get more playing time. So we've seen that with a lot of the Bay Rays. Somebody like Josh Lowe, who you look at the projections preseason and you're like, okay, I'm not sure if he's actually good, even though he had a ton of pedigree and really good numbers in the minors, and he flopped last year, and it's like, okay, type sleeper there. But you look at the projections and you can't really project him for on a dollar output because the projection 150 plate appearances. And half like that, especially late in the day, looking for upside, you're saying, does this guy have the potential to outdo what the projections think? And if so, will he playing time? I think the answer is clearly yes to both of those things. And you're kind of seeing the proof in the pudding with guys on the Tampa Bay Rays, even guys on the Reds. I mean, Fraley is a guy who we knew had some power and speed, really got a full accompaniment of plate appearances with the Mariners, but all of a sudden he's here with the Reds. He's got double-digit homers and double-digit steals in a really good ballpark. It's like, yeah, I mean, look at what's going on. If the guy does better, he's going to get more plate appearances. So start looking more at talent and less at, like, being playing time. You don't know what time is going to be, right? It's okay to not know. So I think that's where detach ourselves a little bit from the projections and the dollar calculator and really kind of take a step back and look at the forest for the trees a little bit.
Yeah. And especially NFBC, it's easier to be able, if you aren't super stashing, if you don't have like, yeah, I mean, I have a team with like all, it's such a bad idea. You never want to get here. You got seven, you know, I got like Helsley and Hendricks and Judge and O'Neill, like all these guys just like sitting there on my bench. And I don't have the flexibility to take out a Josh Lowe, when he gets a three-game week and two lefties. Thankfully, we haven't seen that in quite some time. It's usually, you know, I mean, we know that Luke Rayleigh and Josh Lowe are sitting against lefties. The team has enough flexibility. They'll get Harold Ramirez and Manny Margot in there when a lefty's in the lineup. But yeah, oddly enough, we haven't seen a lot of that where it's like two lefties in a series of three. But Josh Lowe did sit. He did get the day off against a righty on Tuesday, which is interesting. But we do have that flexibility of our lineup. Same thing with Jake Fraley. It's one of those things with lineups, it's easy. It's okay, three righties, he's at home, he's an auto play. Two lefties, he's dinged up and okay, and he's on the road. Okay, yeah, I'm sitting him. So sometimes these decisions are made by themselves. It's pretty easy. By the way, speaking of Rayleigh, there are only just, you know, a few facts here. See what you think of these. There are only five outfielders with an isolated power over 290 with guys with at least 150 plate appearances. Two of them are on the Rays. One is Luke Rayleigh, and the other is Jose Siri. Speaking of Jose Siri, so there's only one outfielder with a contact rate over 90%. That's Stephen Kwan. And then there's only one outfielder with a contact rate sub 60%, and that's Jose Siri. Go figure.
Wow, not Joey Gallo. Jose Siri getting it done. I mean,
I think it's plate appearances for Gallo.
I know he was a Dodger guy back in the day, but like Luke Rayleigh, like where did this guy come from? I don't think I understand it.
I don't know. I don't know.
I didn't even know he
was the
Rays in the preseason. I have to admit.
Yeah, I didn't really until I drafted a whole bunch of Josh Lowe and then realized, wait, Josh Lowe may not make team for Luke Rayleigh. What the hell? And then he started hitting and just kept hitting, like, you know, little respect. So I rostered him in April. I've since dropped him, and I guess that was a mistake because Rayleigh continues to rail.
Yeah, 27 28 year old journeyman, like, you know, obviously just goes to the Rays and gets the Rays magic, like just so freaking easy. But you know, I think a lot of this is, you know, you look at the way baseball is constructed, you know, you have 160 games, we're like halfway through. And what we find at the end of the season is going to be so far different than what we're looking at right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be real easy for Lane Thomas to hit a 3-for-40 slump. You know, a guy like, I don't know, who's a top guy? I guess Julio Rodriguez. You know, he's like top 10 in terms of like dollar value. And I feel like he's been a disappointment.
Yeah.
Right. He can easily hit like 300 the rest of the way and just like be one of the best players in fantasy. I mean, that's totally within his talent range. And yeah, I think when we look back at the end of the season, like things are going to look a whole lot different. I know this isn't a hot take, but you know, it's just a snapshot in time right now. And you know, there's still, it's crazy how fast the halfway point of baseball season has snuck up. Like it felt like 2 weeks ago, I was like, oh snap, we're a quarter of the way through. And then last week it was 33%. And it's like, we're 50% already. But there's still so much season to go and so much that we haven't even thought about that's going to happen.
So much season, so little fab. Nobody's got money left. Crazy, man. I'm going to stretch that out. By the way, I got a $57 Gavin Williams on my best main event. Ooh. I needed it so bad pitching. Like, it just literally gift. Like, you know, my friends who say I continue to, like, get gifts year after year. But gifts happen. Like, you sometimes, when you keep digging, you know, you keep, like, kind of, you know, trying to look in for the diamonds, occasionally you find one. It happens.
Great start. I mean, is that just a function? Is your league asleep at the wheel? Or did they just, like, not have a lot of money left? Or was there...
I don't know how. I actually don't know how it worked out, because he went for, you know, 150 plus just about everywhere else. Maybe people were going after other things. Other guys went for a lot. I mean, I thought he'd be one of the big hits of the week, but no, it's a competitive league. I don't know what happened there.
Wild. You know, I mean, as good as Yuri Perez has been, I spent like $380 on him, and I'm just like, dude. I mean, you get Gavin Williams for 57. It's just like, where's the value?
You know what I think it was? I think it's your boy, the ghost of the fear of Cal Quantrill, because there were some quotes, and I mentioned it even in my Sunday update. Like, I wasn't planning to bid much for Gavin Williams. God knows, no chance I thought I would get him for under $100. I just threw the bid in just in case, and it just in case happened. But it was the fear of that. It was a Terry Francona quote about them not wanting to go 6-man rotation and how Cal Quantrill is basically going to get into the rotation. So someone needs to be out.
Yeah.
So it's either Logan Allen, or maybe Gavin Williams had another bad start. He'd be out. Thankfully, he had a good start and it worked out.
What's that like, Vlad? I mean, you're the Fab Whisperer. What's that like to, like, refresh your page and just look at what you got and be like, oh my God, I got Gavin Williams for $57?
I don't know. It feels good. But what really feels good is, like, those, you know, the $3/$2 on somebody that you, like, specifically, you know, like Matty Woods' boy, Josh Boers, this week. Like, I was real, like, the more I dug into him, I'm like, okay, they just lost Leclerc. I kind of need saves. He's got a 7-game week. He's got like a 33% or 38% strikeout rate. Like, dude, like, he's the guy. He's the reliever I need. And I remember even, like, you know, told a friend, I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to go. I wanted to share my biz with someone because I needed someone to check me. And I'm like, I was going like $5 on Josh Sports because I like had to have them. But the funny part was, is because I also needed starting pitching, I ended up getting a $7 Johnny Brito over him. So I didn't even get my Sports. And then, of course, Sports gets the win on Tuesday. Johnny Brito does not.
That's especially brutal. And the Josh boys luck out. I think he gave up a solo homer to give up the lead, so it's a tie game. Yep. And then they scored.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Must be nice. Good job, Matty Wood.
Yeah, good job, buddy. Impressive stuff. I mean, no, honestly, I do have to give him props. I have to give him props here, live on the air. Like, the work he's doing on the bullpen report. And it's funny how when you concentrate on a certain thing and you've got a little niche going, you really have time to unearth those special things. And I remember, you know, there was a time when I was super stubborn earlier in the season. I'm like, I'm just going to rely on my own thing. And then I started looking into his art. I'm like, oh, wow, bro, you hooked me up with Brock Stewart with like an amazing week. Nick Anderson with an amazing week. Like, yeah, you're just like kind of nailing these guys that I need. So, if you're out there, if you guys are looking at our stuff, if you're not just a listener to the podcast, but you're an FTN subscriber, make sure you check out Matty Wood's bullpen report. It's really solid stuff. And unearthing those gems where you get the 2-3 win week every once in a while. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's really good, bro. And you know, I like, we talked about this last time I was on the pod with Eric. It was just like, when you have kids and you have a job and you have all this stuff, when I was 24, I could just like dig in all this stuff myself. And at the end of the day, you know, when you have a limited amount of energy resources, of mental resources to like give out, sometimes it's worth just saying, okay, I'm going to let somebody else do this part of it for me. I don't have time to go digging through bullpen stuff. Right. And so to have a report like Matty Woods, I look at your fab column every Sunday before I sit down and do my fab. It's just like, dude, I need this. You know what I mean? So it's, I'm not just saying this because I'm on your pod, but like, dude, you guys are doing really good work.
Yeah, because we can't all AJ Preller it, right? You can't micromanage it. You leverage your experts in the field and the different things. Help me get, you know, this person helps with the fab, the closers, the here, and then you kind of piece it all together. Because again,
that's right.
I just don't have the time for all this.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Dude, that's perfect way to end it. Sammy, anything, tell us a little bit about your pod or just like anything else going on with you or anything else that you would like to promote.
Yeah, man. Read 'em and Weep Pod. It's just a solo pod. I'm actually headed out to play the main event of the World Series next week. So
nice.
Flying out Saturday. Gonna try to bank the main and get really rich. And if I do win it, I will. My job just go back to doing some fantasy sports stuff on the side. You know, that's.
Oh, dude. Nice, dude. That would be amazing. Fantasy needs you. Your writing and your. You on camera back in our lives, so I'm rooting for you to take that down.
Thanks,
is Carter Gill going to be there? Is he going to be in that?
I can only assume, and I hope I'm at his table. I mean, there are two great joys in life. One of them being with Carter at the poker table. One of them is being with Carter at the draft table. And I haven't accomplished either yet, so I'd really like to cross one
off the list. Oh, dude, that would be amazing. Sammy, thank you so much for coming on. An absolute pleasure as always, and I'm sure we will do it again soon. I hope everybody enjoyed this one, breaking down all the positions for the first, overlooking the first half and through the second half as well. I guess we'll talk to you next week. For my guest, Sammy Reed, I'm Vlad Sedler, and this is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Peace.